Hey guys, this is Mike Mahaffey, the old bastard BJJ guy, here for BJJ Metal Models. Back in my day, we had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get to the academy just to learn some crappy technique from a random purple belt. You kids have it so easy, because now you can just subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium and get tons of great audio courses to learn new techniques, enhance your mindset, and entertain yourself. You can even get personalized rolling reviews from some of your favorite BJJ Metal Models coaches, including me. It's like having your own seminar, you spoiled little whippersnappers. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium right now, get off my lawn, and go train.
Hey, welcome to BJJ Mental Models, episode 264. I'm Steve Kwan. BJJ Mental Models is your guide to a conceptual and intelligent jiu-jitsu approach. And I'm back again with returning champion, normally from Estonia, but today I believe from somewhere in the United States, Mr. Preet Mikkelsen. How's it going, Preet?
Good morning. All good so far. A little bit tired, but all good.
So what brings you to the United States, by the way?
Just traveling. Going to Sunboards, just that everything worked out better this way that it came through here. And now Sunday morning, early, I would go to Sunboards to Globe Trotter camps.
Well, not too long ago, you were up here visiting in Vancouver, and I got to meet you for the first time. And something that you mentioned during your conversations with me was how you teach your new white belt students. And you and I were talking about this, and I thought, you know what? This would make an amazing topic of conversation. It's going to blow some people's minds on Reddit. So let's get into it. You know, you've been on both this and our premium podcasts probably about a dozen times now, Preet. And every time you come on, we talk about defensive jiu-jitsu. But today we're going to talk about offense. We're going to talk about beating up white belts. And I'm very excited about this. So the backstory for the listeners out there is, Preet, when we got together, you mentioned something interesting. You talked about how you've started teaching your white belts submissions first. And I love that idea. To me, in my mind, it makes me think of all of these people who come in and they saw jiu-jitsu in the UFC and they want to learn to fight. So you're throwing them in there and letting them beat each other up. But I know there's actually a lot more to it than that. So tell me about this. Tell me about your new submissions first theory and why you're teaching this stuff to white belts before anything else now.
Yeah. So to be honest, I'm not doing the teaching. My buddy that I run Estum Jiu-Jitsu with, Ronald Stimmer, he's doing the teaching. But so we've been doing this for 2 years. We changed actually a little bit because our club turned towards the, constraint-led method. I feel kind of safe to say towards that ecological approach framework. Because we trained, I've done a lot of different beginner's courses during my years. So, we had a twice a year starting courses. We take people in September and then people in January. And we have a 3 months course. We build them up. But now we're doing a cycle. People jump in whenever they want. They do the 20 classes and then they jump out and they can start whenever they want. So that has been a big change what we do. It kind of makes it easier and we don't stress about it so much about the beginners. But because we tried a lot of, beginner's courses, you always try to combine, you have 20 classes. That means, it's 2.5 months. So yeah, 10 weeks. So yeah, so 10 weeks, 20 classes, that's about 2.5 months. We have done also beginner's courses that has been 3 months, but at the moment we're doing 20 classes. And what's been happening is, during the 20 classes or, even a little bit longer, you usually do a combination of what you want them to know. Okay, a little bit guard, a little bit passing, a little bit side control, a little bit, escapes. But it's never perfect. And you always kind of tweak it. You want to find the perfect balance, how much something you want to teach. But for everything, there's a little bit, too little time. And what kind of submissions do you pick to show them, And what kind of passes do you show? And only one of them, submissions, they work independently. it doesn't make sense to teach, you know, 20 classes of guard passing or 20 classes of side control escapes or 20 classes of top. Submissions are the only one that kind of work individually, that you can just teach them. And so that was one idea. And also we had, like, we have had problems with people like finishing beginners courses and they come to, you know, main group, whatever we had back then. And let's say they don't know sometimes submissions so much and they don't know what to tap to. So, you know, somebody puts on a darce or something, like sometimes it's not like a choke, it's a crank, you know, and people don't know it, or they don't recognize the threat, and maybe they suffer too long in it, and, you know, their neck a little bit hurts, and it's not as pleasant experience. And we notice them, you know, like with leg locks also, because maybe you teach, you know, Achilles in a beginner's course, maybe you have time for that. But then there's other stuff, and they don't know the threats. They don't know what to tap to. So they're a danger to others and to themselves. Because if they don't know other submissions, they become maybe creative, you know, and they do other stuff. Everything is like, you know, let's say, I'm not saying explosive, or they're not trained for the threats. So that was like a main thing. And I don't remember, I don't think it's my idea, but I don't know where I got the idea at the moment, if I'm thinking of it right now. I'm a little bit jet lagged, so maybe it's because of that. So first I told this to Ronald, let's do it. And he's kind of like, I don't know, it's interesting. But then he came around. And so we've been doing this. We changed a little bit in August. But I think we're doing STM Jiu-Jitsu now. It's kind of like, I think, 2 years old already, a little bit older than 2 years. So we started with this and we liked it because people understand the context of submission. Like you said, they seen it, you know, UFC or whatever, and they understand it's very final, you know, like it's submission, and the context they understand. They don't understand why the half guard is needed, or it's one of the awkwardest moments to put two beginners to the half guard and explain why it happens. So this makes sense. And also I wanted them to be safe, so they know exactly what to tap to. And in 20 classes, actually, we can teach a lot. So I'm naming submissions. Maybe I don't name now the 20 of them from the top of my head, but I guess I name some. So we teach them inside heel hook, outside heel hook, toe hold, knee bar, Achilles, calf slice, banana split. Then let's go upper body a little bit. We go, obviously, arm bar, you know, triangle, Americana, Kimura, Tarico Plata, darce, anaconda, north-south choke, guillotine, rear-necker choke, whatever is left after that, you know? And so we teach them main threats. And obviously, we have a small test in the end, actually, like that seems to be working interestingly well, that we ask them five submissions. And actually, they're studying, you know, because obviously it's a single independent classes. So they didn't spar at first, so we changed a bit. I will talk about it later. And obviously they have a hard time sometimes remembering things. So adding that small test that we will show you, we will ask you like five submissions, made people actually stay after class, repeat certain things, remember, you know. So that was kind of fun side effect. And I think our rate of submission injuries went low. People didn't turn, like, roll out of leg locks anymore and everything. So because we do heel hooks in a gi also. So I don't really care about IBJF rules and stuff. I do jiu-jitsu and then we compete under different rules. So, you know, even in Achilles, you know, if you have a good lock, people can roll out and hurt their knees. So now those things were out of the window, basically. So still, you know, still, let's say things happen. Yeah. But I would say it was way lower. And people, as much as the feedback was, people liked it because it was cool, you know, submission. And, you know, somebody wins, somebody lose. And then we did it with the progressive resistance. And so they could drill a little bit and try and stuff. So that was fun. And now with ecological approach, you know, I'm more comfortable, like saying constraint-led approach. Now we actually have more time because Ronald felt that with that approach, he doesn't need that much time because there's less details and stuff. So actually, we only do half an hour submission, and half an hour we do games, like sparring, like games to prepare them for live sparring. So, you know, obvious ones, guard passing ones, point the legs away, get to the knee line, and, you know, some things like that, or to talking about side control top, block the guard, you know, stop them going to the knees. So we do like a drills with them, and we have 20 classes. So I believe that half of them are games like this that prepare them better for sparring. And half of them, we also try to introduce defensive structures because you still see values in them that actually people are using them right away. And even if they're, we can train them, you know, with resistance again, with constraint-led and task-focused drills. So defensively, we teach them to keep the elbows close and everything else. And obviously they, you know, they could spend way more time there, but it's enough, you know, for them. So right now it seems to be a nice combination of half an hour do submissions. And with really, it's interesting with task focused stuff. It's kind of fun to teach it this way. And we need way less time. And then it's like 10 classes of, you know, defensive stuff probably, and 10 classes of games. I think that's the one we do right now at the moment. So it's been fun. We're actually trying to, like, the first beginners probably will finish the new cycle when we teach it with constraints, all the submissions and games. I think they're finishing now, like, December, end of December or something. So we're starting to have new people coming in, and then we'll see again what happens. We hope that they're more ready to spar, because that was usually the thing, that they're sparred less, and we can't introduce them sparring when they've done the course, like 2.5, like 2/3 of course is done, then we introduce them to rolling and stuff. But now we hope that they know what the task is, you know, what the guard is, what their objective is in a guard, you know, the pass, the knee line or whatever. So we'll see how it works and what tweaks we have to do. But submissions, yeah, we like the concept because, yeah, so they have defensively, you know, they can shut down or they know what to hunt. And then, you know, I guess they end up having problems passing, and then maybe half guard makes sense, and because they won't get to that because somebody has a good guard. So then it makes sense to introduce that or talk about it, or, you know, whatever the main group is actually doing. And it's been fun. It's really controversial in that sense. Whenever I mention that in your place or also in Finland and stuff, people are always like, double checking, you do what? You teach beginners HELOCs? I was like, yeah, I know people that somebody's first day is an inside HELOC class. And it's hilarious to me because always this been taught to us that it's dangerous and you shouldn't teach people, you know, beginners, definitely HELOCs, and they will kill each other and everything else. But I think opposite seems to be true, that they're aware of the threats. We teach them that why it's dangerous to roll out and why it's, you know, why it's dangerous to be stupid. And actually people are more aware of threats. They develop some control and everything else. And it's, you know, you teach them the threats and you make them aware of that. You don't hide it, you know. So because not talking about it actually is more dangerous. So far it's been fun. It's been definitely, the submission part has been really good. And that because of the method change, we have actually time to add also other stuff. Because before the constrained approach, we did, I don't know, like 15 minutes maybe. We did some defensive structures because we still see, like I said, use for them because people are actually doing them. Even if they do it like 15 minutes every class. And then we did submissions, but now we have more time actually in our hands. So, and it's been working great. And obviously this, I'm still waiting to, you know, how they look and how they kind of blend in to the main group. And is it more smoother, so to speak? And I guess we ask them and stuff and how they feel, and are they more ready for that? Because some of them have comparison methods, some of them don't. So, but we will monitor them. Yeah, so that's the long story short.
You know, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, but it's just funny because you're Preet Mikkelsen, right? I mean, if anyone else said that, you just kind of nod your head and say, oh, that's interesting. But when it's the defensive BJJ guy, just the idea of people showing up to your class on day one and learning inside heel hooks is just kind of hilarious. But it does make sense, right? Everything you're saying, I see where you're coming from here. From an ecological approach, yeah, you can carve off some good games that will help people learn to feel the submission so they know what the danger zone is. And from my perspective, one thing that is good about your approach here is the focus is on making your students safe, making sure that they know when they're in trouble and how to stay out of trouble and how to avoid doing something dumb. Whereas at most gyms, often that first 3 to 6 month period, it's about trying to make them familiar with all of the positions and submissions and trying to get them reasonably effective in that first period. But the problem is you're not leading off from a place of safety. And as a result, you go to a lot of gyms and despite the instructor's best intent, you usually see a ton of injuries, especially at the junior level. And that's unfortunate because consistency is really the best way to get better. And if your people are getting injured all the time, you're preventing that from happening. And moreover, too, if someone has just tried jiu-jitsu and at your gym they suffer an injury in the first 2 weeks, well, you haven't really done a good job teaching them, right? They came in here to get better, to learn how to defend themselves. They got hurt right away. And if they're new to jiu-jitsu, there's a good chance they just won't come back. This isn't good for your business. It's not good for the person impacted. So your approach makes a lot of sense, actually, just this idea that you start from within submissions and you let people play within there so that the recipient learns where the danger zone is and how to survive, and the attacker learns how to do it from a controlled standpoint and not just hurt someone without thinking.
Yeah, so, you know, that's why I think I understand that people are confused. That's why I'm not the only one that runs a club. So it's me, Ronald, and we have the young black belt Tom Manorm with us, you know, as a coach. So we're running a club as a whole, so it's not only my ideas, it's a lot of that just what we think. Yeah, so it took us a while. I started to talk to Greg Sauras like last year, October, I think, a little bit. And we had some private chit-chats. And then in August, I was ready to start teaching this way. And I think about the time then also we added to beginner's course some, you know, constraint led. And now we're doing it more because we're more used to it. You know, we're trying to figure it out because it was like a bumpy road because of the way the constraint-led and ecological approach was presented a little bit, or I don't know why they did that even. Like, you know, it was, I would just call it first mysticism a little bit, but now the more the podcasts are out and stuff, the more it looks like more reasonable things, you know, that it's, now I understand this, that, and looks, but it was presented a little bit like more harder than it was. And we're slowly getting into that and trying to, you know, tweak it and try to learn and try to do the games better and see, like, we have to teach one round, you know, like the beginner's course, 3 months or two, you know, 2.5 months to see that all the games we've done. And okay, now this game didn't work, you know, this results we didn't like, we will change it. So we still have to teach it multiple times, the section. And the same comes to with the same goes to with submission, because we have done it 2 years with, you know, with the old method. It was, you know, we did still some progressive resistance and everything based on how we learned before. But yeah, what's really changed is like the constraint led added that both have tasks, and now beginners having fun. They don't train each other. They train themselves, so to speak. One is inside the submission, trying to do the right things, you know, their task, and one is finishing. So before it was, you know, one was playing a fool and one, you know, training other. So very big thing was changed for us was that both have tasks. And yeah, so far, I really think that the submissions are the very interesting, fun context that people understand right away, because, you know, they come to the class, what they want to do, they, you know, they don't know why the guard passing is important. And I think with games also what we do, it can be more fun and less, so to speak, technical. If you start to teach beginners like a, you know, knee slide with 10 minutes of details, their head explodes and they don't understand actually why they need half of the shit. So, but submissions, yeah, it's kind of a fun part. It's, I don't know, for them, it's something real, you know, I win, I lose. And we can teach them, yeah, like 20, every class is 20 different submissions. So like I said, like teaching some beginners HELOC as a first class, someone's, that's hilarious. But because, you know, like I said, it's always considered that it's dangerous. And I know still people think you should teach them later and people get injured and stuff, but our experience says different. And it's actually, you know, a lot of fun, so to speak, and to introduce them with danger. And then, you know, in a way, I don't know, it sounds weird, that let them decide, so to speak, what is dangerous, what is not. So we kind of make the, you know, people make that choice for them. Oh, we don't trust you with that threat, you know. But actually, if you do it well, people can handle it, you know. And it's better to always, I think, you know, having, I'm a, you know, a new father also. So having, if something is dangerous, it helps to talk about it, introduce it, instead of just avoid talking about it and hide it, you know, because the kids will find it, you know. And I had an experience with, I was in Canada and I stayed with someone that had a basement, and there's stairs, obviously, and there was a two-floor building also, so there's more stairs. And what do I did? Like, I just walked stairs every goddamn morning, you know, because I can't let my kid loose there and I can't, you know, block everything. So we just walk stairs, and I introduced him to threats and stuff. And it was, you know, jokingly a bit annoying, but now he's walking stairs, like experienced stair walker, you know? So it's better to introduce them the threat instead of just hiding it, so to speak. So in jiu-jitsu with submissions, it feels our experience is right now the same. And yeah, like, you know, our sport still happens, and I wouldn't say it happens more to the beginner. So I'm not saying there's no, like, you know, injuries. It's still physical sport and things happen. But because of me teaching submissions to beginners, we haven't seen like rise of just submission injuries or people going crazy and everything because of that. So just more even, because now sometimes I'm actually, it's fun to roll with beginners as much as I roll with them, because what they know is to how to shut down totally, like, you know, elbows close and doing some turtles and stuff, or hunt you. They know submission. So if they see you play guard, in a way, or maybe now because now we're playing games and stuff for guard passing, but before that, they just knew how to shut down and hunt you. And it was very, very, like, I just laughed when I roll with beginners, because they go for submissions. And that's kind of the point of the grappling anyway. And if they see a guard, they jump on your leg. And, you know, if you defend the legs and stuff, then they find reasons. Oh, now I need a guard passing maybe, you know. So they build a context and why later. But it was very, very fun to roll with, because they don't have control. They don't know why they need it yet, because they have a submission. So if they don't get to the control, now there is a context. Oh, now you understand you need a control before the submission. So there's always a trade-off, you know. Obviously, if we would have time, we would teach something else also. And now with some games about side control and passing and everything else, we tapped into that also a little bit. So we'll see what the outcome will be. But yeah, submissions are fun. And, you know, the test, like I said, also helps. They seem to be remembering better certain things, because they're, you know, jokingly afraid of the test. And it's kind of, sometimes people are actually very nervous, because it is like single classes and we don't roll. So certain, let's say, not recovery, but certain retention. So retention could be like, you know, information retention could be better because they don't roll so much. And I'm still for beginner's course being separate, and then they join the main course. There's some problems also because, you know, it's still a course, and some people feel that you do a course and then it's done, and maybe how to go from one course to another can be smoother, and some people quit because, oh, I did the course and now it's done. And so joining people to the main group right away, like they come to the just join. Some people do that, but I feel that beginner's course separately works better, because otherwise in main group, I don't think the beginners get their necessary, you know, foundation for what they need, because main group has their own cycles and stuff. So at the moment, we're sticking to that also. And yeah, we're kind of very happy that we were able to do the change, because it sounded crazy, but I'm trying to recall while talking, where did I got it, the idea? Because I'm not going to say it was, you know, my genius mind, but I think I got inspired by something, and then we talked with Ronald, and so I'm not remembering who gave me the input, because it's almost like 2 years, and maybe 2 years, even like maybe 2 years and 2 years and a half ago. So I'm sad I can't remember who gave me the input, but so far we're happy, and we're you know, tweaking the results. So kind of constraint led method through our wrench in the system. So we're trying to adapt to it and do it, let's say, for us even better.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of is how Salo Hibero used to present his old system back in the old Jiu-Jitsu University book. He kind of broke down Jiu-Jitsu into these five stages, starting with survival and then building on top of that from there, with the final stage, I believe, being actually finishing a submission. And I always liked that mindset of teaching survival first, even before we get into talking about quote-unquote defense. It's one thing to learn how to defend from a position, but if you're a white belt, probably the most valuable thing we can teach you for your day-to-day training is how not to get submitted all the time. And you're right that this does kind of fly in the face of what people in jiu-jitsu often expect. A lot of places, they will have this notion of advanced techniques that for one reason or another, they don't teach the white belts. Usually that's things like leg locks, like you said. And this is even enshrined in the IBJJF rules. There's techniques that you unlock at blue belt, like wrist lock, and then at brown belt, that's when you can do things like toe holds and knee bars and slicers. And so we set this idea that, oh, these techniques are, they're too advanced, too dangerous, so let's push them off into the future. But I agree with you that all that does is it scares people about those techniques, and it also defers their learning in a way that's not helpful. As a relatively new father myself, similar to you, I see this and I battle with this all the time, as any parent does. As your kid starts to get bigger and starts going off on little adventures and exploring, you have to get used to the fact that they're going to fall on their face. They're going to fall down the stairs. They're going to get dirty. They're going to do things and hurt themselves sometimes because they're kids, and that's part of learning. And if you try to create an environment for your kid where they never get challenged and they never get hurt and they never get scared, then you're really setting them up for developmental problems because you're not allowing them to hit that wall and learn how to grow. And that's one area where the ecological approach adds a lot to the way that people think about jiu-jitsu. In jiu-jitsu, the common way that people often teach is step by step. But eco tells us that we create a little arena and little games that people can play in so they can get comfortable and they can explore and try new things. And in your case, that arena is basically inside a submission. And I think that's an interesting way to teach things because, look, if you go to most white belt gyms, I mean, relatively early on, people are going to start practicing submissions. Some gyms defer them, but usually most people by white belt, they're doing submissions. So they're going to learn it soon anyway. The idea of starting them there, I don't think it's actually that much crazier than what a lot of gyms do, where maybe you start off by teaching them close guard. Because if you start from there, then within a few weeks, they're going to be doing arm bars and triangles anyway, right? So you might as well focus on the danger so that people learn how to stay safe.
Yeah, and like I said, I like jiu-jitsu. I don't especially like IBJJF jiu-jitsu. We compete under different rules. And that wrist lock thing from blue belt and that leg locks from brown belt doesn't make any sense. And I think, you know, if you start to learn leg locks from brown belt, you're missing out. And it's like already people have been doing leg locks since white belt, and then maybe they unlock the ability to do them in competition in brown belt, but they're already like efficient leg lockers, and then they compete. It doesn't make any sense to start learning leg locks in brown belt and then you compete in brown belt. So just you're going to be so much behind. And I think if I remember correctly, you can correct me also, because wrist locks from maybe, let's say, blue belt, but banana split is also allowed in white belt, I think.
I don't recall specifically, but I don't recall it being banned in the adult divisions at any level. Again, I will fact check myself. If this turns out to be wrong, I will remove it. But I believe that adult white belts can do banana splits.
Yeah, so that's kind of crazy because that is very dangerous submission. And, you know, compared to what is more dangerous, split or a wrist lock or some leg lock. And I don't know. It's for me, it's weird that like Nogi Jitsu has now heel hooks, you know, and then I guess purple belt can do like knee bar and that kind of categorization. Somebody has played God and decided that it's dangerous for white belts to do a knee bar or blue belts to do a knee bar. And that is really doesn't make any sense. And it's sad that those things happen and there's no like, I don't know, debate about it. And somebody just decides that this is the way they want it to be. And it is what it is. And that's why, I guess, in competition-wise, IBJJF is losing a little bit ground also. And Nogi competitions are taking over. And that's why they made a change in brown belt. Let's do, you know, he looks in Nogi. And then reaping is allowed. And, you know, because the point against he looks was reaping and everything else. So like, oh, my knees and stuff. But now they gave in. So that's like weird politics. And it is what it is, you know. So, but yeah, we do this and it seems to be totally fine. Reaps are normal, so to speak. And it's more than if you don't know what the reap is and how it manipulates your hip, maybe that's dangerous. But if you know what it is and how it manipulates again, then if you're aware of that, it's nothing extra dangerous, so to speak. So yeah, I feel really like teaching them the threats actually is helping them more than just, you know, not showing them things and then somebody does something to them in a gym and they're not super aware. And I think that's way more dangerous, actually. And yes, it's always like people trying to protect white belt and also like, you know, teaching them submission, I guess, is like only submissions is a little bit controversial. And obviously you want to teach beginners like right jiu-jitsu, whatever that is. But I guess the way we do it right now, it's a good compromise of what we think they should have, you know, having them like doing some games from guard passing and stuff, and also what triggers them, like submissions and stuff, what they understand, what fascinates them, what context they get. And then if we lure them in, so to speak, then it's time that to unlock and they realize themselves later that what they need, and then it's time to introduce them stuff. So we kind of have to consider also a little bit what they want or what they're meant to get. And then there's like a middle way with that, like what we think they need and what they actually understand and want to do. Because, you know, it shouldn't be boring. It should be interesting. And sometimes it's too much like dry jiu-jitsu, so to speak. And it can be actually quite fun. And submission and games for different parts of jiu-jitsu, I think the beginning can be more sport. And we have, you know, people sweating since first day, doing stuff with resisting opponents. We don't ever talk about resistance at the moment because it's kind of like we just add more constraints if you want to, you know, we don't want people to go crazy. So certain things are just fixed right away. So, well, you know, we've always been tweaking. So at the moment, I'm not seeing anything like, let's tweak this, let's tweak that. But I was interested to see that we actually have more time. So we added some games, but we haven't talked with Ronald anything else about like, oh, let's do this or let's go back to doing something else. So it seems to be working. And the feedback also, I think, has been positive, so to speak. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. You know, with what you're saying here, it kind of is jogging some old white belt memories for myself. And I roll with a lot of white belts. I roll at a kind of a family casual gym. And so I tend to be one of the more experienced people on the mats. And there's some things I observe about white belts. And I've been there myself. I mean, I think we all have. When you're new, the main thing that you battle with is you're scared. Everything feels dangerous and exciting. And you're in this heightened sense of arousal doing jiu-jitsu. And you don't know how to control your body properly. And even if you did know how to control your body, you're not in a mindset to do it because you're in that heightened state of arousal. And I've said on the podcast before, I've changed my thinking about how you should teach beginners. I used to, in my mind, think about, well, what position would I start people from if I'm teaching them from day one? But now I don't think of it that way. Now my thought is, if I'm teaching someone from day one, the first things I want to teach them are how to regulate yourself, how to control your breathing and stay loose and just prevent yourself from doing anything stupid. Jiu-jitsu safety is all about control. And that's kind of one of the beautiful things about jiu-jitsu is when you get good at it, you can roll with control. But new white belts, they don't know how to do that. And they're definitely in no mindset to do that. Whereas the way that you're approaching this, where you kind of give them the dangerous parts first and let them get comfortable with that, I can see how that could work. Because if you show people all of the knives in the drawer, all of the scary things, and you teach them how to do them safely, then they're less likely to be scared in those situations. They have more knowledge about what to do. And hopefully they're going to be smarter then, so that if they do get caught in that inside heel hook, they know how to escape safely. And they also know when they can't escape. And similarly, the person doing it, because they went through the same program, they know what the danger zone is and they know how to take care of their training partner. Because the issue with so many white belts is because they're inexperienced in submissions, they have a tendency to try to hold on way longer than they should. They try to fight their way out of them, even when they're doing so without any technique at all. And a lot of the time, the person doing the submission is so excited that they go way too hard. And they're getting submissions not through control, but through force and damage. Thinking back into my game, this is a big part of how my jiu-jitsu changed as I got more experienced. I used to get most of my submissions just by, you know, going hard with them, being forceful, whereas now I'm much more slow and controlled and deliberate. And so I think that there's wisdom in what you're saying here about giving your white belts a toolkit from day one so that they take care of themselves and so that they also know how to take care of their training partners too.
Yeah, so the idea that I like what Greg Sauter said, and we have to prepare them for messiness. And if you teach them pure technique and stuff, and, you know, so the messiness is what drives them nuts, so to speak, and they're not used to it, you know, things changing fast. And so I really think with those drills and stuff, with, you know, guard passing drills or the way we teach submissions, let's say there's a D'Arce hold and we put them there, we cannot finish, or let's say triangle, yeah? You put the triangle on, you can't finish. You just have to hold them there. Another person tries to unlock your legs and they can, you know, roll around, whatever. Your job is to just keep the legs and don't squeeze. And we teach them control. And also, obviously, we teach the beginner, it's inside a triangle. Okay, push your shoulder in because that's the right thing. You can stack and, you know, sort of things we know that's already a right behavior in that late stage anyway. So we're not letting them, you know, figure it out. We can tell them a little bit like what your aim is. Your task is to push the shoulder in. And beginners, if you're finishing, your task is to like cover the shoulder. So shoulder is not seen and you only have like a head and arm and, you know, like a good things. So you can give them special tasks and they're fighting about the right things, so to speak. And then obviously maybe you can open up the triangle a bit and then step by step, you know, make it harder for yourself. But I think that messiness, that is what makes them come, because if they now spar, they have met that before. They have experienced that before. And it doesn't throw them off. But if you don't add the messiness and kind of that thing to the equation, then sparring happens that they freak out because they never experienced that as a whole. And that is what I think was missing when we taught things, or, you know, in even earlier years. How to get used to the messiness and how to introduce the sparring. And also you mentioned something, just if I come back, like, you know, they don't maybe teach submissions to beginners. And I think a lot of the times, I think beginners are taught too much close guard anyway. So close guard seems to be the one that dominates like beginner knowledge. But I don't think it's very actually fundamental, because I always have a question that I ask people that, which one you think is more fundamental? Is it open guard or closed guard? And people have been taught mostly to say closed guard, because that's what we see also in YouTube and like beginners, you know, whatever the DVD is about beginners, for beginners. But if you ask like differently, not like, well, what is more fundamental, but if you ask what kind of guard you can't play without, you know, then it becomes, oh, without open guard, I can't play. Without closed guard, I can easily play. So I think also just teaching people like, you know, I'm not saying wrong things, but if you concentrate teaching people like closed guard, I think you can hinder them other ways. So it's really have to be careful, like the skills, what they need. They need open guards, you know, and they need to develop the hip movements, and they need to like some control from side control, block the hips, stop them going to the knees and then stay there forever. And the close guard is kind of like exception a little bit of some open guard version. I like to actually call it close guard, not closed, because closeness is what defines it a little bit. So in Estonian language, I can't play with that so much with the words. So in that sense, I think people need to consider also that if you watch what actually happens in matches, you see very rarely close guard. There's still some matches with close guard, and obviously some people have made a career out of that. But overall, I think they need better open guard, you know? So that's why I think we also concentrate more on open guard when it comes to beginners. And obviously, you need to know what to do in close guard and how to get stuck, because if somebody has it, you shouldn't panic. But it should be like you really have to see what is actually happening, you know, and what's the ratio of things and what they need to know. So I think that's what also happening in with our, you know, beginner's course. And also, I think the beginner's courses, the danger is to fill them up with everything, you know. So let's say I feel it right now, it's a good balance, like half an hour submissions and half an hour, let's say we have something else. So 20 classes is like all together. So 10 classes, we do half an hour, like I said, structures, and half an hour we do those games. So I think it's not too chaotic. I know with ecological approach, the classes are sometimes, I don't think it's a bad thing, it's just more chaotic. Like people do, like Greg likes to say, like they play full game every class. And in a way, we can also this way, because, you know, changing things up, doing this drill, doing that drill, keeping them different also makes sense. So as much as we start to understand the ecological approach, you know, and the constraint-led stuff, then maybe we tweak here and there something, because we have time and we'll see. We have to just see what kind of people come out, and then we know what they're missing and what we want to add and, you know, what's the average outcome. So that's we're kind of excited also about it. What are the people that are coming out of that beginner's course if they really attend all the classes? And so, yeah, so kind of December is that month, and maybe we start to see more of those people, so we have more information.
You bring up some interesting concepts here. And one is you've questioned a lot of the things that many people would consider the quote-unquote fundamentals in jiu-jitsu. And closed guard is a perfect example of that. At least when I was coming up, closed guard was kind of the number one thing that you're going to learn if you're a new white belt. And I think a lot of gyms still do that. But I agree with your assessment entirely that it's not really the most useful thing that you need to learn from an on-the-ground defense standpoint. And I know that you're not the only one who thinks this. Rob Bernacki has said many times he teaches open guard first. In fact, he bans his students from doing closed guard until they've got some competence with open guard. And the reason why is because, I may be misquoting him here, but what he had told me was that when you're a white belt, if you don't have any tools and all you have in your arsenal is closed guard, you basically learn to just hold the person there and not do jiu-jitsu. So neither you nor the other person are learning anything, because by the fact that you've got two unexperienced people doing closed guard, they're basically just not moving. They're not really learning. Whereas open guard, because it's fluid and dynamic and there's a lot more happening, it gives you more practice. And you've talked about this a few times about how Greg Saunders talks about the importance of the messiness in sport. And that's so true. I think that when people think of martial arts like jiu-jitsu, they think about these perfect techniques. And if you do it right, no one can stop you and you can just slice through their defenses. But that's not how it works. The way that you get taught things by your instructor, if they're using the old model and they're showing you step-by-step instruction, that never works, right? I mean, your instructor will show you all of the steps and you try to do it on a person and those steps just fall apart because your opponent did something you didn't expect. So the real learning happens when you get messy and things are ugly and your training partner is doing things you don't expect and you have to adapt on the fly. And that's what eco is ultimately all about. And I think that this is also why a lot of people in more traditional gyms get so frustrated, because they're learning these steps and they can follow the steps just fine against a non-resisting opponent. But as soon as things get messy, nothing works anymore. I mean, I'm sure you've heard this. This is one of the most common beginner complaints I have heard. People tell me all the time, I've been training for 6 to 8 months and I feel like I'm terrible at this. I don't know how to do anything. Every time I try to do one of these techniques against a resisting person, it never works. I feel like I'm the worst grappler ever. And my response is usually, that's normal. We all went through that. And that's just a side effect of the way that a lot of gyms teach, because the way they're teaching you techniques is not reflective of the way that you're actually going to do these things in a live environment. That's the perception-action coupling part of ecological dynamics, is you want your training environment to be as close to real life as possible. If you're doing this against an unresisting opponent and you're breaking it down into these perfect steps, that just doesn't reflect the messiness that happens when you're actually sparring with someone.
True, yeah. So that's why, you know, the close guard, I think it comes from the like old jiu-jitsu, something like, because open guard wasn't a thing anyway, you know, then close guard was a thing. And maybe it's just carried to this day. But teaching beginners close guard just like dominantly, like what's it called, mainly, and it doesn't make any sense because you don't develop hip movement, or just let's say close guard hip movement is very difficult. And I know why people like it, you know, because it's, you feel safe, you know, that people, somebody is between your legs and you have time to work on. But yeah, so for overall, because you would need very good open guards that people can't pass, and then you're a black belt, you know. And then you can figure out whatever the guard you like. Is it close guard, De La Riva? Is it Spam Spider? So you need a good open guard that people have a hard time passing. And then you specialize to some attacking system that tends to happen to you most likely. And, you know, is it under guard, like X or slash guard? Is it like front you stay or something? So you figure it out. But close guard, I really think that close guard is a, like for me, it's like De La Riva or, you know, Spider. You just get there. And if you're long-legged, you're meant to play it more, you know, you can body triangle people from close guard and you specialize in that. And, but if some people just can't play it at all, maybe, you know, and so we really have to, certain old mindsets obviously are still in jiu-jitsu, and certain even old mindsets are dominating, you know, like even in, let's say recently if you're doing seminars, I've been saying like, you know, people know this all the time. Don't put your arms on a mat in close guard, you know. You actually can do it fine and nothing happens. And most white belts are taught, you know, like, or videos in YouTube always show it. If arms on a mat, oh, they do one, you know, they do a kimura to me or hip pump or something. But if you do it really like correctly, you know, a little bit elbows in and fingers pointed out and everything, those things are actually quite difficult. So I feel also jiu-jitsu is like, let's say, full of half sentences. Like right way would be say like, don't put like arms on the mat if you don't know what to do, or don't turn your back if you don't know what to do, or just people are like, don't turn your back, you know, don't put your hands there. It's like, you can do anything you want, basically. Just, you have to be aware of the threats, and always there's trade-offs. And I'm fighting those half sentences a lot, because they have hindered my, let's say, possibility to find out answers, because certain answers I don't find because I'm programmed to not look there. So, but now I just do it. I stack inside a guard, you know, to stand up, I stack first sometimes, you know. So a lot of things that are like forbidden, so to speak. And some people do it. I'm not saying I'm the only one who stacks, but most likely they don't. So a lot of, I think we need more eyes on how to actually teach beginners, what actually they need, what actually is jiu-jitsu, what actually, you know, they get, so to speak. So it should be a balance about what I think they need and what they understand and what they consider fun. And I totally agree with the feedback that it's very common that people think it's their fault that they don't get jiu-jitsu, and they think, you know, it's they're bad or they're not talented, whatever. But I really think it's like the way we do jiu-jitsu. So I would like to take, like, you know, full responsibility. And I've seen crazy things happen to white belts. If I teach them with the constraint-led method, if I give them exact good task and the game is right, like magic happens. They look so smart. They know exactly what to fight for. And I don't think they look beginners. And I made people skip belts in 4 hours, you know, so to speak. I'm not giving them belts, but if somebody was a white belt after 4 hours of just, let's say, turtle, we do open turtle, like straight arms, we play, we don't do anymore. I don't emphasize anymore the head on a mat. It just happens if it happens. But we change the way we do turtles. And I can make a white belt skip belts. So after 4 hours, they look like a purple belt, you know, in that specific area. So these days, I don't know anymore what is a belt anymore, because it's not about technique accumulation. It's just knowing the, like we call them background drills, knowing what you have to do, And then, you know, either you escape from there, you stand up, you pull guard, whatever. But it's not about anymore like, oh, you need 10 techniques and that's why it takes a while to learn it. And yeah, so I've been doing a lot of open turtles. Like we call it at the moment open turtles. So it's straight arm, kind of similar to referee position in the NCAA. So, and the stuff I've been able to do, and definitely with beginners, is like, it's amazing. It's like, it's totally night and day. So, you know, we'll see how it all trickles down to our beginners courses and all to my teaching. So right now I'm happy that I leaped, so to speak. I'm slowly getting into eco because there's a lot going on, and there's some, I would say, I don't know, some is even misleading information by people. So I don't know why they do it. But I think when you go slowly in, I think the magic disappears and it will be the logical outcome. And then I like it so far. Certain science, deep science, I still don't understand. And I don't see it affects my teaching that much. But I still slowly getting in and, you know, trying to absorb more and, you know, new terminology and stuff. And so it's at the moment, with all the beginner's courses and all the, you know, constraint-led stuff, it's really interesting period of my jiu-jitsu career, because I've been doing this 23 years, and to find something that I would say radically different compared to what I did before is very, very fun and very, very refreshing. And to add this to beginners and stuff, it's very, very fun, and, you know, it kind of sparks the jiu-jitsu life and makes everything like nice again and very like challenging. And I'm looking forward to, you know, playing with it and tweaking it. You know, other way, sometimes it gets boring. It's same thing. But now it's very, very fun again. So I'm kind of happy about that also.
Yeah. The idea of playing turtle open, where you're not putting your head on the mat. I actually, at some point, I would love to have just a completely separate chat with you about that, because, you know, I'm a turtle player and I've started doing the same thing too. Well, actually, maybe I never was putting my head on the mat. I always thought I was, but then I realized at some point I'm actually not doing it as consistently as I think I am. I do it sometimes if it's just the right thing to do, but I generally tend to kind of play with my head up off the mat. And this kind of, you know, makes me think of something that you've been mentioning here as well. A lot of the things about jiu-jitsu that we think are fundamental, I think maybe are not really that fundamental. I think jiu-jitsu people sometimes use the word fundamental when what they really mean is traditional. And those are two very different things. I would say that, back on the topic of closed guard is a traditional jiu-jitsu move, but I would not say it's a fundamental. Like you said, you can get pretty good at jiu-jitsu without ever playing closed guard. I rarely play closed guard anymore these days. I almost always go open, play turtle. And, you know, if I were teaching someone from day one, I wouldn't teach them close guard. I would start with, here's some tips for controlling your breathing, for staying loose. And if you wind up on the bottom and you want to learn technical stuff, I mean, probably the first thing I teach most people these days is just stand up, right? And how to do that safely. And that flies in the face of what a lot of people would call fundamentals in jiu-jitsu. But I think we have to remember that a lot of these decisions that were made about what's fundamental or not, they're arbitrary decisions that were made decades ago based on what people thought at the time effective fighting looked like, and also based on their agendas too. We have to remember a big part of why the rules are the way they are is probably because it sells Brazilian jiu-jitsu. We're encouraging people to go to the guard because that's what is unique about classic Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And so for a long time, people disparaged turtle greatly about what just a useless, terrible position it is. And I think a big part of that is because people were avoiding that position because it was not point scoring. But I mean, it's so funny how much that conversation has changed with the rise of the ADCC. I'm sure you've noticed this too, where suddenly in the last few years, everyone has gone from turtle is this dumb, awful position to all of a sudden, I have to learn to get good at turtle. If you want to succeed at the highest levels, you have to have a good turtle. And it's been a very, very big culture shift. And a big part of that is just because of the rule set. It's a silent guide that alters how we learn. The rules change the outcome. And so it's important to understand sometimes and to question these things, that the things we think are the right way to do things, just because they're traditional, that doesn't actually mean they're fundamental. And again, you also bring up some good points about people just speaking in half sentences. And I think that's true as well. People in jiu-jitsu tend to speak in a lot of just absolute statements. I remember going through this when I was a white belt. I remember coaches telling me, never do this. You brought up a great example about putting your hands on the mat. I was told, don't ever put your hands on the mat. You're going to get kimura'd or omoplata'd. I've been training like 15 years. I don't think that's ever happened to me once where I put my hand on the mat and someone kimura'd me or omoplata'd me. So where does that really come from, right? Where does that knowledge come from if it's not actually something that happens as much as we would think? And the problem is we as human beings, we're kind of biased towards these absolute statements because they sound so confident. But something that I've learned is there's this thing called a certainty heuristic, right? We have this bias in our heads towards these absolute statements. And so now, whenever I hear an absolute about jiu-jitsu, I question it because I know it's probably not actually an absolute. There's probably some missing knowledge there.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I would say Turtle has been, you know, it's always, I would say, like, I told you before, I talked about this 5 years ago. But now, even MMA, it's, you said the ADCC, yes. Even the ADCC, like, you know, owners and stuff have said publicly, I think, if you don't want you to be scored against, then learn Turtle, you know. And also recently, I think if you saw the fight with Usman and Chimaev, and Usman used straight arm Turtle to avoid getting knocked out and getting choked. Chimaev was in, you know, hooks in and stuff. And there's some cases that Usman was almost getting belly down, then, you know, and then he went to straight arm turtles and he hid his head and he stayed there, you know. And then, you know, I'm not going to, oh, this is the greatest evidence ever, but this is, you know, this is something, you know. I'm always not going to willing to test it, but this is something that he survived. And, you know, Greg Jones and Volkanovski trained turtles for Makachev fight, I think, because they were trying to stand up and not end up in a bottom side control. And as soon as the Makachev would punch from turtle, they would try to stand up. And so they have to open the grip to punch. So turtle has been interesting because, you know, if I mentioned it back in the day, and then, you know, people were like, I would say it could work, you know, and that would make sense. And but people didn't have anything to believe, you know, from the point or something. I don't know how to say it. But now there's randomly more evidence during the years. And we see actually turtles also in, you know, in MMA. It's not like everything. It's not always going to work, you know, something. But there's still enough evidence of it working also. So that's been also fun to watch. And even Greg Jones, like I said, has been doing himself also straight arm turtles and stuff. And he has a video series, I think, just stand up, you know, just ruin jiu-jitsu by standing up. And that's been different, you know, kind of adding fighting attitude to jiu-jitsu, just stand up from everywhere, you know. And it's a fun period, so to speak. And there's not much like instructionals, I think, about it, considering, you know, we've seen Usman and Volkanovski, and I think Greg Jones stuff is there, but it's still compared to, you know, like there's relatively few DVDs about it, you know, like what actually, like compared to how much we have like De La Rivas out there and all kinds of open guards. So defensively, I think we have more room for some minds working on things and having their perspective of the turtle. And then, you know, so I think still that's happening or should happen. If it doesn't, you know, I have ideas to fulfill it also with more planning, like some new turtle DVDs and stuff. I don't know actually how to teach it because I can teach it only with ECO at like, you know, constraint led method. I don't know what other techniques about it because it's more just we do games and we just add complexity and it's hard to show you actually what's technique about the turtle if I do it. But yeah, that's a different story totally. But yeah, the jiu-jitsu is full of those, you know, things that just people keep repeating and never thinking about it. You know, don't put your arms on a mat. And if you actually, you know, ask them why, you know, oh, kimura, but if I do this, he won't. And, but, you know, people maybe have their own excuses. Yeah, but, you know, overall, it's a good idea or something then. And they're defending also those old sentences instead of just like throwing them out and actually saying things differently. So it's easier to follow and it's harder to break out, so to speak, and say things something differently, you know. It's easier to just get the previous information and you don't have to think about it. Somebody said something, it looks smart, sounds smart, let's take it. And I think that has happened a lot during the years. you know, and always the sentence is keep your elbows close, let's say. But if you go like, if you ask actually people, close where, you know, so then it's like, you know, a lot of question marks actually in people's faces. It's like, close where? Like, what does it actually, that does it mean? Because I know that elbows don't have to be close. Maybe one, yeah, not always both. And the open guard people know like, oh, keep your knees to the chest. I would say not always. You can actually have one knee on a chest and then other not. And so, you know, a lot of those half sentences, and if you, or even just something like elbows close, like where, why, how, you know? And just it's like elbows close, oh, water is wet, yeah? And you don't question that anymore. Or what it actually means, you know? Where, why? So I think that's really important that we keep challenging those old, like, wisdoms. And maybe those wisdoms came with a package and that actually explained everything. But I think in some point it got passed on without the explanations and it just became the thing. So, and then we really need to like start thinking about it. And also that's what that teaching method, you know, that ECHO gets some resistance from people. And it's interesting to follow that and how people react to it and how sometimes stubborn the ECHO guys are, you know, they're literally like this is it and this is the best. And it's a fun period. I think it settles in some point and we move on as a stronger community, and we have to just understand. And I think it's you know, overall for us in our club is interesting, and overall what's happening in the world, it's also interesting. It almost feels like a small change or a little bit bigger change is coming, and we'll see. I'm interested to see where it heads and how it so to speak settles and what's the final change gonna be, you know. Is the jiu-jitsu clubs will change, you know, compared also what we talked about, beginners courses, is there some change, or are we still doing the closed guard and, you know, stuff, or is it changing also teaching, you know, how we approach stuff? So I think it's interesting period to be alive and see the jiu-jitsu development in the world.
Yeah, awesome. Well, hey, as someone who's just been through this process recently, Preet, if someone were listening to this and they thought, man, I want to try this. I want to start with a submissions first approach at my gym, and I want to build that up using ECHO games. Have you found any resources or best practices in your journey that helped you learn how to do this? If I were a coach and I wanted to do what you've done here, where would you send me to learn how to do this and get started?
Good question. At the moment, I would just say contact me. And then I know I have to harass Ronald because he has all the materials about it and how he structures the class. So I have to harass him. But I think if somebody is interested, they can contact me through Messenger or Instagram, you know, Preet Michelson. I think Instagram is Preet.Michelson. So then we can talk about it. And because I don't think there's any material out there, you know, like, why would you do it? And just maybe one thing I would say, you know, that I always forget his name. The Art of Learning.
Josh Waitzkin.
Yeah, always I forget the name. And he talked about, you know, starting from the end, you know? And submission is kind of the end. You know, you play the game with the king and a pawn and a king, and you play that game first. And then you build up from there the complexity. Switch on the pieces, add complexity, do the middle game, and finally you end up in a beginning. So submission is kind of starting from the end. What is the end goal of here? And then you build complexity, you know, and then you go further from submissions. And then basically, like, you, the furthest is you're an open guard, and then you have to pass and get to submission. So this is also starting from the end. So if you read, example, that book, or if you read, like, you know, teaching the end in mind, I think you can Google, there's some information. So that helps, I guess, understanding that why you even should teach from the end, because chess is very complex. And they use it. They don't teach you from the beginning. They teach you those mini games. And I don't mind if people contact me, and then we'll see how much I have to harass Ronald and what comes out of that. But if there are people that are interested, I'm willing to share what we know so far. And if enough people do it, then I probably make it like a, I don't know, like a document or something that we have to just harass Ronald a bit and write everything down, like, you know, like in simple terms, and then I don't mind sharing it. So it's not a secret what we do. And just people have to know we will change our minds when we have to. But that's what we do right now. So we're happy to share.
Awesome. Well, as I always do, I will put those links to your Messenger and your Instagram in the show notes just to make it easy for people to contact you quickly. But I would also ask, I mean, let's talk about your platform, right? Defensive BJJ. One of the things I've always loved about your platform is that it's two-way. You've got a whole community in there where it's not just you sending content out to people, but you give them homework, you give them projects, you invest your own time in your customers, you treat them like remote students. I think you and I are the only people who really do that. Most online subscription sites are just one way. It's just a big library of content. Have you ever thought about doing defensive BJJ coaching? I mean, if someone were an instructor and they wanted to learn how to do this in their gym, if they were a defensive BJJ subscriber, would they be able to send you questions there as well? Or do you just do rolling on defensivebjj.com?
No, I think you mean like, what kind of questions? What do you mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, as you know, BJJ Mental Models Premium, we do rolling reviews. So if a grappler wants high-level detailed feedback on their game, they can send in a video clip and we'll have a really elite black belt break it down and give them personal feedback. But something that came up a while ago was people started asking, well, I'm less interested in my technique and more in my coaching. You've got some really good coaches on the platform. Can I get them to teach me how to coach as opposed to just teaching me technique? So we started accepting submissions from people where they could send in videos of themselves coaching. And our coaches would instead give feedback on how to run a class better or how to be clearer in their communication instead of the normal feedback, which would be how to be a better grappler. And I'm just wondering if someone wanted to use you as a resource for coaching, is that something that you do through Defensive BJJ as well? Like, would you be willing to take questions from people who are running a gym and they want to know, you know, maybe I'm not asking you how to escape from Turtle. Maybe I want to know, how do I as an instructor teach my students better how to escape from Turtle? Is that something that you would ever do?
I would take it on. Yeah, if somebody is interested, I wouldn't mind. And we can do it the same through Defensive BJJ. Interesting. Yeah, you asked that because I think Christian Grauert, he started, it kind of shut down the project, but he started the teaching BJJ kind of community. And there are a lot of coaches actually were involved, but then it turned out that many people don't have time. So it was more about teaching. And there was actually, I think if people go to Teaching BJJ, I think there's some resources that are actually free. So that was more about actually teaching. So I was also made some videos for that. But if somebody's interested, yes, I could tell them what I do now or how I do now. Because again, like this constraint-led approach through like a wrench to the way I've coached. And I started to coach this way, new way, in my gym also, starting August. So I messed up enough classes and, you know, now I have more experience about it. And it's sometimes not easy to teach this way. But I can guide people that maybe I tell them what I did wrong or what kind of mistakes I did if they want to, you know, use this constraint-led method. So what to look for, what to do, because I'm new in this. And I guess I can teach them, I can show them like how I do like my seminars, and I can easily explain them how I teach, let's say, turtles with those games and what usually the side effects are. So I have enough experience of doing longer classes, like, you know, typical I do Open Turtle, it's 2x2 hours. So I don't mind explaining this to people, you know. So yeah, if somebody's interested and I can tell them, I can, you know, make them understand what I do right now and how it's all evolved and what they should expect and how they should mess up a lot of things to learn, and then they adapt, and it's a journey. But yeah, I wouldn't mind if somebody's contacting me about that also. So yeah, all good.
Awesome. Well, I'll put a link to the show notes to your platform. That's defensivebjj.com for people who haven't checked it out. I always recommend Preet's platform. One of the things I love about it is it's such a common beginner problem to get stuck just feeling helpless and like you don't even know how to defend yourself. And so I've always loved the idea of starting defense first, helping people build up their confidence in their ability to survive and then expanding from there. And additionally, I mean, it sounds like now if you're a coach and you want to learn how to deploy this stuff in your gym, that's an option as well. So I'll put a link in the show notes. DefensiveBJJ.com is where you go. I'll also put a link to all of our stuff. Everything we make lives at BJJMentalModels.com. The main thing that people know us for, of course, is this podcast. There's tons of content on there that's all free, so you can go there and keep yourself busy for quite some time. Additionally, that's also how you can sign up for our awesome free newsletter, and that's also where you can learn more about BJJ Mental Models Premium. So if you join Premium, the main thing that you're going to get is an entire library of audio content talking about jiu-jitsu strategy, concepts, tactics, philosophy, mindset, kind of more the big picture stuff and not really the nuts and bolts stuff that gets covered in a lot of instructionals. Like I mentioned earlier, you also get direct rolling reviews from some amazing competitors. Josh McKinney recently joined our coaching team. Other people on our team include Amanda Bruce, Brianna St. Marie, Margot Ciccarelli. It's just a really stacked roster, and it's an amazing opportunity to get very detailed feedback from some of the best grapplers in the world. I really don't know any other way that you can do this other than on BJJ Mental Models Premium. So definitely recommend checking it out if you haven't already. All of that's at BJJMentalModels.com. And again, I'll put a link to that and also Preet, all of your stuff in the show notes as well. But again, man, thanks so much for coming by. You know, I always love having these chats with you. I just appreciate how you, of all people, are willing to question the norm and try new things that kind of go against some of the established truths that people believe in jiu-jitsu, which I think we're increasingly discovering are maybe not as absolute as initially thought. So thanks again for coming by.
Yeah, all good. Thank you for having me. And it's always, I enjoy our chats and yeah, and love coming back. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thanks again. And thanks to the listeners too. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.